Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals.
Good evening. Welcome to Sports Day. Carl Langdon, Paul Hazeby with you. Tony Sage to join us in the not-too-distant future. He's just got a commitment on the television, and then he'll have a yak to us. So much to talk about tonight. A couple of big announcements today. Global Rapid Rugby doubleheader to launch their season March 14. That'll be the opening round here in Perth. Samoa will play South China at 10 past 4, and the Force will play Malaysia at 6:15. You can expect there'll be fireworks and maybe parachutists and all that stuff that has been synonymous with the entertainment that has been provided by the Western Force. And UFC to return to Perth. UFC 251 will be staged here on Sunday, June 7. That was announced by our government today. Paul Hazeby, how are you?
Going very well, Carl. Yeah, very exciting to have more UFC here. And what a big day it was. And the FFA media statement around the Perth Glory and basically stating that the sale is off. What a balls up it's been over the last 2 weeks, from the initial statement to Jim Elwood's prematurely releasing his video, to nothing being announced to the FFA, then to the uncertainty of the cryptocurrency and the LFE token, to different identities. And now we've got to a decision, the right decision, but did we need to go through all of this? Tony Sage has a bit to talk about tonight. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done to Gareth Parker. I mean, he's been like a dog to a bone on this one.
Relentless.
And he's done his due diligence, his own due diligence, and he's worked very hard behind the scenes to get the story out into the public domain. And look, we'll give Tony Sage the opportunity to ask some questions that we'll throw at him tonight, and hopefully we will get his side of the story here on Sports Day. Chris Mayne extended his contract at Collingwood. What a turnaround. Here's a bloke that couldn't get a game at the Collingwood Football Club. He's played 42 of the last 48 games for the Magpies.
And he's one of the first picked. It is a great story because he was done. He played 3 games when he first transferred. He was on the big money, and with that comes a lot of pressure, not only from the outside, but I think from his teammates. And we'll ask Steel Sidebottom a little bit later about that. But another year, and I think in the future he's going to make a very good coach because of everything that he's been through.
Alex Di Minaur, Nick Kyrgios, also announced to be part of that Davis Cup team to take on Brazil. That's being staged in Adelaide. James Duckworth will make his debut in that particular tournament. So looking forward to seeing how well our boys go there. And State of Origin, Hayes, another change. Robbie Gray's out.
Yeah, big one there. Sore foot he's got. He's been replaced by a pretty good player, though, in Travis Boak. So that'll be interesting. And good to see that Lee Matthews will be giving out the jumpers for the Victorians, and our very own Ross Glendenning for the All-Stars. Great to get the tradition back involved with the rivalry. We know it's not WA, but I'm still looking forward to seeing the very best. Hopefully between now and Friday, we don't lose too many more. Cunnington, and today it's Robbie Gray. Keep the very best there, and I think we've got a future with this concept.
Now, I poo-pooed the crowd a little bit last night. I was poo-pooing the crowd, and look, it was 5,280. But it was the highest attended standalone women's cricket event in Western Australia. So I suppose that's reasonably significant. But 5,280 fans at a stadium that holds still around 22,000 made it look pretty sparse. We're talking about, I know I was talking about more about the time of it to enable more people to go, because I just thought it was really strange. You have it in the middle of an afternoon on a school day and a working day. So, I mean,
could have got it to 8,000, you reckon? Had they have had a different time slot? I believe they would have got closer to 8,000.
Even if they had the Australian game second and had our girls playing later, I think that may have probably encouraged a few to rock up after work and after school and go down and take a look. But it wasn't that way when it comes to the scheduling for whatever reason. So, but still, 5,280 is a record for a women's cricket match here in WA.
It was, and speaking of Australian teams, when does Cameron Green get a go? He's still only young. He's made 3 centuries this year. He backed up his big score from last night, got to 158, not out. WA made 371. He's made 158, 121, 126. He makes big scores, and you mentioned it last night. When he gets to 50, he generally goes on with it. That's 564 at 70 this season. He hasn't bowled much, but when he has bowled in Sheffield Shield, he's taken 28 wickets at 21.53. Now, I think he needs to be in that team. The Bangladesh tour that's coming up, you look at the Australian team, they've been very successful. Who's vulnerable? Joe Burns is vulnerable in that lineup. He only averaged 32. He's 30 years of age, didn't quite take the opportunity here in Australia. Can you see anything happening there, Carl, where you can maybe reshuffle the order? Maybe Manus Labuschagne. I know he's been brilliant at number three. Could he open, which then opens the door for Cameron Green to come in? Because it's always better to have a all-rounder that can bowl. And I know he's not bowling right now, but by the time that test against Bangladesh is played, he will be.
No, I don't reckon he will be. I just reflect back to what he said to us last night, and I think that from what I can read body language, I reckon, reasonably well, I would suggest that he's turned his focus to becoming a batsman, and that right now that bowling is purely on the back burner. I mean, he did say last night that he was only going to be bowling off one or two steps, and that he'd also had issues of four of the last five seasons when it comes to him being able to get out there and bowl long spells. And he also said that he would probably only bowl a maximum of 10 overs rather than the 20 or 30 overs that you might be required to toil away in longer form cricket. So, look, I wouldn't be backing in at all that he is going to be bowling significantly into the future, in the not too distant future. And I think that right now we've got to talk about him as being a batsman. Now, okay, your argument about Joe Burns. Now, Joe Burns has certainly been up and down in Australia this summer. He made one good score against Pakistan and failed. Pretty much in every test then that they played against New Zealand, he made one reasonable score and failed. I think he only made 150 against New Zealand. But if he had been playing for New Zealand during that test series, then everyone would have thought that was okay, because the Kiwis did really struggle for the most part. So, look, I think he's in the discussion, but Justin Langer hasn't even spoken to him yet. Now, I don't think we need to really rush him in there. And Joe Burns was knocking down the door, making a poultice of runs like a few others before they got their opportunity. Justin Langer, Matthew Hayden included. And they got into the Australian team, and then they got shunted back out and had to fight their way back in. So whilst he's making a pretty good start to what's still only a fledgling, right, first-class cricket career, I'd be prepared to invest more time and allow him to make more runs before we thrust him into the cut-and-thrust pressure cooker environment that will be straight away upon him as a Australian player.
What if he gets two more tons in the remaining games?
I don't care, mate.
Really?
No. I think that, that'd be certainly a opportunity to bring him into a system, but then just allow him to continue to grow. I mean, what, he's still only 20 years of age, isn't he? He's not old. So by any stretch of the imagination, and I don't think we need to rush them. I think Pekowski is a prime example of a bloke who was on the cusp, and now obviously he's been concussed on the back of his mental health issues, which have been very public, and he's been open and admitted to going and getting help. So, look, I'm prepared to just wait a little bit longer. I don't think that we need to throw these young blokes to the wolves, so to speak, and all of a sudden he goes out there in his first test, mate, he might fail, and then what do you do?
Well, I think you back him in, because he is 20 and he's making those runs. If you look through the list of players that have made more than three centuries before their 21st birthday, you'll find all of the greats that are a part of that, and I think sometimes you just got to go with your gut feel, and I reckon Justin Langer may look at him for that test series. Whether he plays or not, he may travel against Bangladesh to get some experience, but all of his centuries too have been good ones. When he's come in, the team's been in trouble, he fights hard, and obviously if he bowls, that's an extra bonus. The beauty of our bowling lineup is he might only have to bowl 5 or 10 overs, and that would be enough for me.
All right. 9221882 if you'd like to join the conversation on that front and have your say. When it comes to the footy that is about to be played here in Perth, Hayes, with West Coast and Freo, and they're taking on Essendon, and we'll have a chat to Lee Tudor after 7 tonight, who'll join us here on Sports Day. So it'd be nice to just touch base and find out how Essendon are travelling at the moment. And with the Blues, what are you expecting out of our two teams, and are you hopeful that Freo are going to be about the mark in 2019, in 2020, or have you got a few concerns?
I've got a few concerns, no doubt about that, with all the injuries that they do have. You only get two hit-outs, so I think both teams will try and put their best players out on the park, but for Fremantle, they're going to be missing Fife and also Walters, which will make it difficult against Carlton, who come over, and they've had a few injury concerns of their very own, but it's more about the style of play, what Justin Longmuir is going to implement. There's going to be mistakes, because I think there's going to be a bit more freedom for the players to take some risks and get involved with the game a little bit more. So I'm not expecting too much early. Sometimes, like when Ross Lyon first came across, it took 5, 6 and 7 weeks to get that chemistry between a number of the new players. So I think if we can find a new style that's going to take them forward in the long term, I think that's what I'm looking forward to from Fremantle this year.
All right, we'll clear a break, and on the other side, hopefully we will have the owner of the Perth Glory. We'll get into our Perth Glory update for the Hyundai A-League, where heroes are made. Hopefully Tony Sage to join us after this.
Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Our number is 922-11882. If you'd like to get involved in the program, repeating the Sheffield Shield score today, Hayes, the WA boys ended up at
371 they made. Tasmania currently 5 for 188. Joel Parris with 2 for 27. Dave Moody 2 for 55. And of course, Cameron Green 158 not out of 233 deliveries. Carl, he can certainly bat.
Yeah, he certainly can. Couple of the other games that were played today, what are the results there?
Victoria 9 for 330 and currently 3 for 73. Queensland, they're all out for 184 today. Will Sutherland was the destroyer, 5 wickets, and New South Wales, they got to 373 today. South Australia 6 for 135 in reply.
I'll tell you what, that shower of rain that came across the city a short time ago, imagine if the cricket was still going on over there at the Wacker, Hayes. It would have finished that, wouldn't it, mate? I mean, it was unbelievable.
Well, it was, and there was an issue yesterday with the rain being around that the Australian team could not afford for a drawn result from that game. So luckily we got through, but if it had been played tonight, there would have been some concerns. Would have done a fair bit of damage to the pitch, I imagine, just looking at some of the pictures around Western Australia with the news.
Yeah, it was absolutely incredible, but to actually see how much of that was coming down. Traffic update. Look, there are fallen trees over the road in St James, and there is also in that particular area on Hillview Road, I believe, in St James. So please, if you are in that particular area in St James on Hillview Road, please drive carefully in that area. 922-11882 is our number here on Sports Day.
What'd you make of Harley Bunnell, the comments today from Melbourne? Unlikely to play before the midpoint of the season. This is the guy that they've invested a fair bit in to bring to their football club, and now in the knowledge that he won't be there until probably the midpoint, Carl. That's disappointing for him. Still clearly some issues with his calves.
Yeah, still obviously some issues. But look, it was probably a risk in the first place. He'd obviously done enough to convince them that he was a potential or a chance to play. But, you know, like, if he's going to be playing this season, you'd want him up before then, wouldn't you?
You'd want him to do a body of work.
I find it surprising.
I think it's probably a positive from the fact that they're looking more long-term with Harley Bunnell, that it's not just about this season. They want to invest a lot of time, take their time with the recovery from the surgery that he did have on those calves, and then look towards maybe towards the back end of the year. Hopefully they're in the finals race, and then next year get a full pre-season into him.
When you were asking me about my predictions last night, I had a bit of a look into my crystal ball, and I didn't have to look too far to find the wooden spooner, and you might disagree with me, but I thought that Gold Coast had their moniker written all over that. I don't see that going anywhere else other than maybe Freo. So I know you wouldn't like that, but I just thought I had to throw that out there nice and early tonight.
Michael Barlow threw it out there the other day that Fremantle could get the wooden spoon. I'm not prepared to go that far. I think with the home ground advantage over here, they should get enough. But I'm not convinced it's going to be Gold Coast either. I think they're good enough to get 6 or 7 wins this year. And if they do get on a roll, they get some confidence from that, and some of those players that have been around for 2 and 3 years start to grow legs and they do some damage against some sides.
Now, I'm leaning the way of Richmond to go back to back, but it's so difficult. I just wonder how burnt. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I just wonder how burnt GWS are going to be. You know, they've got 6 players playing in the State of Origin, which I think is a signal that they're a very talented group. I like how they're structured up down the middle of the ground. And I think that, you know, Jeremy Cameron is well and truly in his prime, and I think that he wins the Coleman medal. I think that he is the man to watch. And I reckon your boy, if Carlton can win, and I reckon they can win more than last year. I reckon they can win more games. But I think that there could be a Brownlow medalist coming from your part of the world. I just think that that might happen. And I'm tipping Paddy Cripps to maybe win that particular award, the Brownlow medal, at the end of the year.
That's, I don't disagree, just because of his ability to get votes. And there's not too many, though. I think Sam Walsh will start to take a few votes off somebody like Paddy Cripps this year. But going back to the Giants, I think if they head into the final series with a fit Canelio this year, and also Callum Ward's another one that will come back, they are saying about round 4 or 5.
Okay, let's clear a break on the other side. Hopefully Tony Sage will join us here on Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals.
Still waiting for Tony Sage. Been delayed with 7. We're happy to take your calls, though, on 922-1882. And Michael is joining us. G'day, Mike.
Hello, Carl. How are you going?
Good, thank you, mate.
Yeah, I just want to say that Australia were really lucky last night getting through, because the English are going to smash Australia in every sport as usual, and Aussies are wankers and shit in sport. You got it?
Oh, I disagree, though.
Yeah, but this
totally disagree.
You know this bloke, he sends the rudest emails to my email, that guy. Hopefully we've got his number. And the language that he uses in the emails is disgraceful. It is terrible. So I'll just put that out there. Thank you, Michael, for calling through, but I don't mean that. Tony Sage joins us here on Sports Day. Obviously, it's been a big couple of weeks for him personally and his club, the Perth Glory. Welcome, Tony.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. Sorry I'm late.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I know that you've just done live TV, but I thought it was important that we got to your side of the story here on 882-6PR. Mate, can you take us back to, you know, who the first person it was that you met at LFE, and when and how that shirt sponsorship came about in the first place?
Yeah, well, look, this is where the story gets lost, and I've just met these guys and I got conned. These guys sponsored the whole game against Chelsea, where we had, as you know, 55,000 people. So I met the head guy there. We then did a sponsorship on the back of a shirt deal. He then went to buy a club on the Eastern States. They came to an arrangement, and again, it didn't come to fruition for whatever reason. I think it was more about money. Over the last few months, I've gone to London. I've caught up with the guy. And he just said, look, we're in the middle of a negotiation with the EPL club, but it looks like it's going to take a long time. Do you want to be the first club in Australia? And I said, make me an offer. And about 4 weeks later, they made an offer, which was 2 weeks ago. And I did the right thing. I said, yeah, okay, that's interesting. I'll come and talk to you about it in London on my next trip. So I sort of agreed terms, what I wanted out of it. They wanted 100% of the club. I said, no way. I wanted 80. I got them down to only 80 instead of 100. Then the money obviously changed on that part of the deal, because they couldn't have 100%. So all those things happened. So when I finally agreed to go to London, I decided, which I think was my only mistake in this process, was to call all the players in and the staff, because I was leaving for Zurich on a business trip first before I got to London. And I didn't want the players who were heading to Tokyo to wake up in the morning of the game saying the club's been sold from under them. And that would have been distracting for the most historic game in the club's history. So from that point, it leaked when it shouldn't have leaked. And once it leaks, people start talking. So that's basically the chronology from when I met them 18 months ago, very casually, because I didn't know them before that. We didn't organise the sponsorship for the game. That was done by the promoter of that game.
So when did you first meet Jim Aylward? Was it just on this recent trip?
No, I met him, as I said, when I go to London, I go to Chelsea games. Both of those guys were behind the LFE go for Chelsea. So I've met them at probably 4 Chelsea games since the time that they came out with Chelsea.
So who's the guy... Who was the guy? Who was the go-between then? Who was the guy that you met, say, through the Chelsea connection that you were talking about off the top of the show?
It was the guy I originally met was a guy called Ben Hunt. So he was the one that organised everything for and behalf of LFE. I didn't meet Jim until probably 7 months later. He didn't come out to Australia on that trip.
So, Tony, with the LFE and they put out the video statement saying that they'd acquired the Perth Glory, did you sign anything? Because why would Jim Aylward come out and make that release and make it public the way that he did? And he spoke to Gareth Parker here on 6PR.
Yeah, look, absolutely idiotic. And I say that in the strongest terms because that's what I said to him. I said, what are you doing? I haven't even left Zurich to come to London to do DD. Why are you telling everyone that the deal's done when it's not done? His story was he panicked because it leaked and he had to get it out there for the token side of the business, which he runs, and the football side of the business is run by Ben. So there are two different, one runs the cryptocurrency side, one runs that. So he wanted, obviously, to tell everyone that the deal's done, so the token side of the business would start to take off. Now, that's the only explanation that I can give. He shouldn't have done it. I was very angry when he did it because then all the questions come up and it forced me to make two statements. One I made on my own personal Facebook page and the other one was on the Facebook page of the club and the website, which clearly stated there was no sale yet. I was there only going over there to do due diligence.
Were you aware of the background of Jim prior to Gareth Parker breaking the story? Of course, we've since found out he's had a few different identities.
Yeah, I found out. No, I didn't know about the identities. I found out about his past on the Sunday when I was in London with him, going through a questionnaire that makes you a fit and proper person to hold a license. So that is part of the due diligence process on any club new owner coming in. You have to go through these checklists. And when I said, "Have you had a criminal conviction?" he just looked at me and said, "Yes." And then he explained to me what had happened. And then I said, "Was that the only one?" He said, "No, there was another one." And I said, "What was that for?" Then he told me about the fraud. So basically, I'd made up my mind at that point, which was on the Sunday. I flew back and then told the FFA, I presume, on the Monday.
At any time, were you confident that the London Football Exchange had the financial capacity to carry out your transaction? But then, obviously, their plan was to go on and buy another 7 or 8 clubs. I imagine EPL clubs don't come cheap.
Yes, I did have that. They raised, they had 4 billion tokens out there. They raised their money already. They had that part of the business up and running, and that was the one that I was worried about. But when I saw that they were trading, the tokens were trading, and the money raising had been done some 8 or 9 months earlier. So there was no problem on the money side. Whether they had any left in the bank, we were going through that process. But once it got past the criminal charge, I said, Jim, we can't do this. The FFA will not approve. And then he was trying to do another way around it by him not being a part of the board or anything. And I said, well, that doesn't work because you'll be a shareholder. So that's when I knew it would not be able to be worked.
Did you sign a letter of intent on the 27th of December? And what sort of price were they going to pay you?
No price was actually agreed. That letter that was bandied around, that was for 100% of the club. Right. In fact, I had the document in front of me, which was 35 pages long, so I know that document wasn't the right one that was shown on the TV last night. So I had a 35-page document, which clearly stated 80% of the club. I was going there for two reasons, DD and finalising the price for the club. So it was nowhere near $30 million. I mean, you've got to have rocks in your head to think that a club that loses between 2 and 3 a year is worth $30 million.
Who was your crypto advisor, Tone? Because, I've got very little knowledge of it. Paul Hazelby across the desk knows a little bit more about it than I do. And what part did Paul Carroll, if any, have to play in this?
Paul Carroll had nothing to play in this. He met LFE through another source, which was Bitcoin
LFE.com, which he represents. So the LFE token business wanted to list on Bitcoin. They met, and coincidentally, he said, "Oh, I know Tony Sage. I used to be a director on the foundation side." And that's how that came about. But there's no way. I use Simon McDonald. Simon McDonald is he used to work for me, moved back to London. So Simon's not an expert, but he knows 10 times more than I do in cryptocurrencies. He's an ex-fund manager. He came to Australia, lived in Australia, in Perth, for probably 4 or 5 years, and he moved back to London. So he's the guy I was using as my expert.
Do you think cryptocurrency has a future in sport and football from the information that you've gathered in the last few days?
Absolutely. It's going to happen. Look, Barcelona, Man City, West Ham, Arsenal, I didn't know any of those clubs used it. They use it on a different level, so no one's actually used it yet for owning a club, but they use it for merchandise sales. They use it for ticket sales when you're in there for food and beverage. So you buy these tokens and you get these sort of discounts. So those clubs are using it already. There will be clubs around the world that will be using it. In America, they're using it big time with college athletes, whether it's NBA or NFL. What these guys are doing, they're buying their future earnings and they're tokenizing them. So if you've got an 18-year-old superstar basketball in college, they can go up and give you $1 million for 10% of your future earnings. They're tokenizing that now. So it's happening all over the place in different ways. But no one yet has managed to do it for owning a club.
Just back to LFE, did you receive, did you buy any tokens during this process, Tony?
No, not at all. I don't know how to use it. I don't know what a wallet is, an e-wallet. I don't know how that works.
So given what's been unearthed here, what do you reckon? I mean, do you think that they're running a scam or do you reckon these blokes are fair dinkum?
I'm absolutely sure they're fair dinkum. They have shown me correspondence with other clubs, French club, EPL club that they've been communicating with in doing this process. What I'm concerned about is why, when I was going over there to do DD, did they release that video? What was the intention of that? Because the coins or the tokens did fly up. After that was put out there. So look, I don't know. I'm not going to cast dispersions on them, but that did happen, and the volumes on the tokens were huge after that announcement.
What does it mean with you and your future with the London Football Exchange? You were expected to be chairman in the future. Well, is there any chance of that still happening?
No, not at all. I mean, the deal was. It was going to be a erroneously. So when they bought the club, I was going to go on as chairman. We picked the 1st of March for that. So I haven't been appointed. I haven't signed any documentation to do it. No, absolutely not at this stage or at any stage will I contemplate that. And again, I would have to sign a piece of paper for that to happen, and I haven't.
So you never sign anything, not back on the in December, not in January?
No, I actually did sign to start, subject to the deal being done, to be chairman of the LFE Football Group, which is completely separate. So my role would have only been to run the football club. So the first one would be obviously Perth Glory, so it would be easy, but then I would be in the box seat to going around buying these other clubs. So for me, it was a dream job.
So you would have been running the ship, so to speak?
Yes.
Right.
That's why
That's completely dead in the water. And so how's your relationship now that you've told him no deal?
We haven't spoken since that time. So I don't know what will happen with that relationship. But look, like I said on Channel 7, when you meet the guy, he's a colourful character. He's one of those guys that, Arthur Daly, I don't know if you guys remember in the old days, he's one of those knockabouts that you just can't help to get enthused by. So
There's plenty of con men like that, Tone. I'm not saying that he is, but from what I've seen unearthed about him, I wouldn't trust him as far as I could kick him, and I don't reckon that looks like that'd be very far. That's my own personal opinion. Now, what about for you now then? Where do you go? You've been trying to sell part of this club for a while. You've been very open and honest and upfront about that here on Sports Day numerous times over the years. Where do you go to now? I mean, you've spoken about Malaysia and other interests previously.
Yeah, look, and what's really made me feel worse about this particular one is every other potential deal I've done was behind closed doors. Like I said, I made a mistake this time by going and being open and honest, but, you know, the most important game in the club's history, I didn't want the players up there to find out and read about it on social media, so that's why I did it. But there's been three offers, but look, Carl, you want the best for Perth Glory, right? I want the best for Perth Glory, sorry. All the fans do as well. So I don't want someone coming here and say, well, they want to change this and they want to change that. And, you know, or one of them was going to encumber the club with an enormous amount of debt, which I've managed to avoid all these years. So, there's three negotiations that I've done over the past 14 or 15 years, but it was all kept in secret, so none of this would come out like it has. So I do regret my decision to do that.
Are you a bit embarrassed by the way that it's all unfolded in the end?
Look, embarrassment's not the right word. Disappointment is huge. And look, I've never felt like a pincushion before, but I still feel the pricks, if you want to put it that way. No, because lots of deals go north. Look, if I felt embarrassed of every mining deal that I've ever lost or made a mistake on, I'd be 6 foot under by now. So, you know, I am a deal maker. That's what everyone knows me as in that game. And, you know, I've made heaps of mistakes in that game. So this is more public.
What would you like to say to the Perth Glory fans?
They know my passion for the club. It hasn't changed. It hasn't waned. All I need is a partner to help in the future when things will get tough, when there's no salary cap and the bigger clubs will take over. I was in Brisbane. Not one player or fan had a bad word to say. I mean, I don't know if you saw the shots. I have a good relationship with them. A couple of them obviously will be a bit annoyed about the adverse publicity. In the end, it's a sorry saga for me, and I've learned a big lesson.
I just noticed that Twiggy Forrest made $862 million last week, I think it was. Maybe he might like to help out at a soccer club. He's already got the rugby played in the same venue. Maybe he might want to transcend.
Look, he's a big rugby man, I believe, so I don't think he will. Not many big rugby guys, fans of rugby, you follow the round ball as much, but any support would be helpful. But look, all we need is 15,000 paid-up members, and that's enough as well. So, you know, if all the fans out there that love Perth Glory that aren't a member, become a member, and we won't have to go through this at all. And you've got me for life.
Gareth Parker a chance to go toe-to-toe?
Absolutely. I don't begrudge Gareth. I mean, he's doing his job. The one that I'm really upset about was a completely unrelated article, had nothing to do with Perth Glory whatsoever. That was on the sports page, but it was really should have been page 3 news today. And it was about a gentleman that you named earlier, Paul Carroll. I mean, he, nothing to do with this whatsoever. Never introduced me, and I even wrote to the journalist and told him he never introduced me to LFE. I'd met LFE, like I said, at the Chelsea game. So for that is the only one that I really am angry about.
We're out of time, I'd love to get you sitting down with Gareth and you two can have a chat together. Thanks very much for your time tonight.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Good on you. Tony Sage, the owner of the Perth Glory. Your calls after this, 922-182 is the number if you'd like to join us here on Sports Day.
Sports Day for Kia. Kia's open season. On now with match-winning deals.
If you'd like to join the conversation, you can. Just remember, football is better than ever. Don't miss a Hyundai A-League match where heroes are made. For tickets, you search A-League. As we go to John in Rossmoyne first, 922-182. John, welcome.
Yeah, g'day, mate. How are you? I just want to put it out. I just want to just like get your opinion on it as well. But the Tokyo Olympics that are coming up later on during the year, with this virus that's going around worldwide. I actually got a son that's actually in the Olympic team that's supposed to be going, but he phoned me today and said they've had an extraordinary meeting saying that the whole thing may not even go ahead.
Yeah, I heard. I've heard that bubbling around. I mean, we've asked a few of the athletes because, as you'd probably be aware, John, we've been speaking to our potential West Australian Olympic qualifiers, and a couple of those that are based here in Western Australia at WACE have already qualified to go to the Olympic Games, and they have not had any clear direction on that front just yet. But you would suggest that the longer this goes on, that the probably more unlikely that it is to actually eventuate, particularly in that part of the world. And I don't know that they could necessarily just up sticks and move it somewhere else where they consider it to be a safer environment.
Well, when I spoke to my son today, and, I don't want to release any names or anything, he said it could very well turn out to be what they call for the first time ever a silent Olympics, where it's just the athletes that'll compete and it'll be televised.
Yeah, right, because it is a 10-year event, isn't it? To get all the infrastructure in place, it's not easy, and just to shift it somewhere else with all the fans is very difficult to do, so I can see that probably occurring, but also all the lead-up events, the qualification events that are supposed to happen throughout Asia
that's exactly right.
So hang on, what are you talking about? So when you say a silent Olympics, basically just the athletes will go, there'll be no fans, there'll be no interaction from anywhere else in the world.
Exactly, just the media and the actual athletes, because they can actually harness that and they can actually control that. He was saying that they can actually sort of like lock in basically if they're infected, and then the month after if they're infected,
would that
so they
be
can
any
go back
fun
to their
though,
prior
mate,
country.
If you're not, if you've got no atmosphere there to perform in front of or anything like that, do you reckon that would be great, would it, John?
Mate, it's rubbish. It's rubbish, I know. But you know what? It is what it is.
Yeah.
But that's what I've heard. So, yeah.
Well, that's good.
Surely you'd put it
you
back
heard
a
it
year,
first on 6PR.
6 months at least. A year maybe because you've got to get the European summer to line up, and I think that could work well. But I think you feel sorry for these athletes.
Well, at the end of the day, what are they going to do with the Chinese team? Are they just going to say, look, you're not allowed to come, guys, and they're one of the biggest teams, and what are they going to do with the spectators? Say, look, sorry, guys, you can't come.
That's why I want to delay it 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, that's surely an alternative would be
I reckon it'd be the smartest thing they can do, so they can actually find out what's, harness it completely, and then they can actually just bottle the whole thing up and then just go ahead with it. But it'll either be the first Olympics that's ever cancelled, or it's going to be a silent Olympics. That's what's going to happen.
All right. Good on you. Thanks for calling through. Appreciate the call, mate. John.
What'd you make of Tony Sage, Carl? Good interview. He still believes, doesn't he, in these guys and also the London Football Exchange, that they do have the capacity to follow through on some of these
promises. I think he's convinced that there is a crypto world that he's become more aware of. Mm. Now, I know that he has only been recently trying to educate himself about that particular world. Now, obviously, I've been reading a hell of a lot more about it since this transaction was revealed back in early January, in my case, when I was first alerted to a potential sale opportunity with the Perth Glory. I think that you've been probably more versed on this world for a little while.
I'm convinced cryptocurrency is the future of a lot of financial systems around the world, not just in sport.
And you know that there are some successful ones, but there's 5,000 or 6,000, as we've spoken to, cryptocurrencies that currently exist, of which only 100 to 200 of them are actually profitable right now. So I think that when we go into that world, I think we've got to be, firstly, one, well-educated, and I think the things we fear most in life are the things we know nothing about. So if you want to learn more about it, educate yourself so that you have an understanding of how it actually works and what product is being made available for sale here. Now, we're talking a sports club or sports clubs potentially in this case, but there are plenty other worlds in which this already actually has its operation in place. And look, as I said, I'm no expert and I will probably not invest my own hard-earned in there, but I might have superannuation funds are already investing in there that I don't even know about, Hayes.
Do you get the sense that that's it for Tony Sage and this group, that there won't be a time in the future where they come back together?
Well, I wouldn't probably think so, given what's
been... What if there was two other clubs that were done, one being an English Premier League
Look,
club?
I think that, look, given the background that's now been revealed in Aylward's case, mate, it wasn't even his real name. And he's still got other now court appearances to go through. So for me, mate, no, I wouldn't have thought so. But anyway, that's just my own personal opinion. I mean, it's not up to me. It's up to Tony Sage as to what he decides to do. And I'm certainly, he's a big enough and old enough bloke to make his own decisions. We'll come back, wrap up our first hour after this on Sports Day. Now, coming up in our next hour here on Sports Day, we'll have a chat to our AFLW coaches, Trent Cooper and Luke Dwyer will join us. Also, Trevor Gleeson. Great to touch base with Lee Tudor from the Essendon Football Club. Looking forward to having a yak to him. And it is all coming your way thanks to Dometic Mobile Living Made Easy. We're looking for Australia's coolest sporting team. Whether it's a goal celebration or a skillful training drill, we want to see your club's coolest tricks. You head to iconwin.com.au to enter. Have ice cold drinks wherever you are with a Dometic Cool Ice Cool Box. Back with more of Sports Day after the news. Welcome back to Sports Day. And as we told you prior to 7 o'clock, out of the 7 o'clock news every Tuesday, it's great to have our AFLW coaches back to back. Celebrate like you've scored a century. Oz Lotto, get amongst it. Play responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858. We get into the Freo camp first. Their coach, Trent Cooper, joins us. Welcome, Trent.
Thanks, Carl. Thanks, Paul. Yeah, happy to get a win on the weekend in difficult circumstances.
3 out of 3, and you probably weren't as good as what you expected you could be.
No, we weren't. Collingwood are a very good team, and we said beforehand that their top five is probably as good as any top five in the competition, and those good players all got plenty of the ball, but fortunately our back line were outstanding all day and stood up to the pressure and gave us a chance to win it when we could sneak forward.
What did you say to the girls after the game? Because you would have had your KPIs that you go into the game trying to achieve. I imagine you didn't achieve too many of them because you just about lost every stat.
We won the tackles and the number of interchange were our two wins. So we rotated really well. We're happy with that. No, we said that in the end, we said that it was great to get the 4 points, but it was a game won on resilience rather than good football. And I was really proud of their resilience, and that'll stand us in good stead at different times during the year when we are challenged. But, yeah, we definitely need to improve our football, and we'll be aiming to do that this week.
A lot's been said about Kiara Bowers and how good she is in this competition, but your process around Jamie Lambert, because she's playing some really good footy, had 32 disposals. What were you thinking throughout the period of the game?
Yeah, we did look at that a lot because she just takes forward of stoppages and she gives you a good look going the other way, but we weren't winning the ball and they were. So she was getting on the end of it. We made sure we looked after inside 50 and she did a really good job on her when she pushed into the forward 50. But yeah, she had 32 touches, but her metres gained, I don't think were any more than Hayley Miller's 13 touches. So we have to have a look at that. She also got 6 free kicks, which is, that's hard to stop. But I in my coach's votes, I still gave her the best player on the ground, but I didn't think she was completely cutting us up. So we sort of went a bit head-to-head with that and thought about putting someone on it. But the problem is, like, Chloe Malloy is so damaging with the ball if you let her have any space, and Bree Davey is as well. And Benici was fantastic on the weekend. They have got plenty of players, so to sit on one probably won't help you too much.
Wanted to ask about Hayley Miller because she's been a little bit quiet in the first two games. I'm a big rap on this girl. She really bursts out on the stoppages and is hard to catch. What have you found from her so far this season?
Yeah, no, well, round one she had a career high possessions in that game. She was very good. And then round two she was done by quarter time with an injury. So she was touch and go whether she was going to play this week. Actually did the fitness test on the morning of the match, and she said she felt good, and she's come through the game really well. So I thought her last quarter was huge for us, and she'll be 100% for this week. So we expect her to continue that form from that last quarter this week.
What's your meeting look like tonight, Trent, when you have a chat to the girls? Because you're 80 possessions down, you got almost double the number of inside 50s against you. What's the message going to be?
Yeah, we'll talk about our resilience and how our pressure was great again, but we'll also talk about how we do need to get better. We're not too worried about the stats because our style of play
we don't need a lot of the ball. I think we've had less possessions than the opposition every week, apart from round two, and even that wasn't a big discrepancy, even though we beat West Coast by a lot. So the stats aren't the be-all and end-all, but we definitely want to be better than what we were on the weekend in getting to the ball first, and that'll be a focus for us this week when we take on St Kilda.
The Saints had their first win. They beat Melbourne, and that was a pretty good result in what was a low-scoring contest, but, you know, given that Melbourne went into that game as favourites, it was a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, it sort of was, but their form the previous week against Adelaide was really good. They really should have won that game. They only lost at the last 5 minutes, and they played some really good football on that occasion. On Friday night, they sort of just more hung in there and capitalised when they could, but they've got a young star in Patrikios, who's just really smooth mover, great to watch, and their full forward, Greisler, she's...
The G-train!
She won the game. Yeah, the G-train, yeah, no, she was outstanding the other night because not only did she kick the two goals, including one from outside 50, but she set up that other one with a 40-metre snap over her shoulder to putting someone in space. So she's got a bit of skill and she can mark it as well. So, yeah, a bit of thought has to go into that matchup.
For our audience, Caitlin Greaser is the lady that we're talking about, which Hayes was shouting out the G-train down the phone to you, Trent.
Now, Trent, last one from me. Draws. We saw the first one, Gold Coast taking on the Brisbane Lions. What do you think? Do you think in the AFLW competition that we could maybe play it out and get an eventual winner? Sam Lane, we had on the program last night, and she was all for it, and I kind of agree.
Yeah, I did hear that. It's interesting proposal. I think what you'll struggle with is the time frame. Because the games are on Fox back-to-back, and there's such a limited time between the finish of the game, that could be a problem. If Fox were okay with it, then, yeah, I don't mind it. I did think that game deserved to end in a draw, but, yeah, I'm not against it if we go with it. I think AFLW is something, you know, that they can have a look at something like that, and, yeah, I wouldn't be worried either way if they do go that way.
Only problem is if they play next score wins, it could take a while, Trent, you know? Like, that is just something to factor in, isn't it?
Absolutely, and they've only got 10 minutes before that next game. Like, our game on the weekend, like, we're a high-scoring team and Collingwood are. It was 1 point each in the last quarter. Like, how long does it go for? It makes it hard as well for the next week if you're buttering up, if you just played an extra, you know, 10 or 12 minutes, which is almost a quarter in the heat as well. Because don't forget, we are playing in the summer as well. So there's a few things to consider if they do go down that path.
Any injury concerns?
No, we had a lot last week after the derby. It was a pretty fierce game, that one. But this week we've got through unscathed, so we'll actually be fitter this week than what we were last week, which is and an 8-day break as well. I think that's come at perfect timing for us, and we're actually really looking forward to travelling and getting away together.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for your time.
No worries. Thanks, boys.
Trent Cooper, and the Dockers girls take on the Saints away from home as we get inside the West Coast Eagles now with Luke Dwyer, West Coast, to take on the Western Bulldogs at Leederville Oval. Welcome, Luke.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me again.
Now, mate, how are you feeling? You're getting a little bit despondent. I mean, obviously, it was a real struggle. I sat there at home and watched the game at Blacktown International Sports Park, and I was thankful that you scored a couple of goals in the last quarter because it was looking unlikely there for a long time.
Yeah, you know, we were thankful we got on the scoreboard, obviously, in the last quarter. But, look, we're really upbeat. We're not despondent. We've had a pretty solid review of the game last night, and there were certain areas of our game which, we probably would have liked to have been a bit sharper in. And, certainly GWS, they rebounded pretty solidly off the back of their North Melbourne game, and made us pay really for some few costly turnovers and some moments where we could have been a bit better with our manning up the opposition. But we're onwards and upwards over here at West Coast, and we're looking forward to this week.
Yeah, well, you certainly can't look backwards. But one thing that I know you've been working on is skills, because I've been down to Lathlain Park and I've seen you at it. But unfortunately, on the weekend, and it's applicable to every game of footy, if you can't maintain possession of the footy, it's hard to set up anything, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a fair comment, Carl. I think we've certainly tried to instill in our girls, a lot of fundamental skill drills over the duration of the pre-season. And, you know, you're spot on. You make it hard for yourself if you, I guess, if you can't retain possession and make the opposition defend for long periods of time. And I guess that's a pretty fair reflection of some of the moments in the game on Sunday where we did all the hard work to get the ball and then we probably gave it back to the opposition a bit too easily. And, you know, that's part of, I guess, our review last night and certainly something the girls are aware of and are really keen to rectify, not only on the training track, but the next opportunity we get to play.
Now, how's Dana Hooker? Because she was, I thought, sensational, mate. She had a fair dinkum crack, and I reckon you'd be pretty proud of her too. But she copped a stray kick to the throat, it looked like, or to the jaw. Is she okay?
Yeah, Dana's okay. She did. She got a really pretty solid kick to the face late in the game. It was a bit of a sort of swing of the foot that missed the ball. But, no, look, she's okay. She's resting up at the moment. She'll meet with our doctors early in the morning tomorrow, and look, she'll be a late call for her availability this weekend.
She's been brilliant. Swanson's been brilliant. Cameron, I think, is really developing in her first season, and Michaela Bowen, the other one that was a real positive from the weekend. You got to keep searching for him.
Yeah, really, really good assessment there, Hayes. Michaela Bowen. Oh, look at her. Her pre-season was super. She's probably, you know, come into the AFLW season with, you know, I guess not a lot of experience playing against older women. And she's really found, I guess, the pace of the game. She's had a couple of moments in games where, you know, she's had some really good learnings, and in particular the Derby. But she's great the way she prepares herself, and she's learning every week. And you mentioned Amara. She's a fantastic young player. She's obviously pretty dynamic. Can go through the midfield and forward and kicked a great goal for us on the weekend.
Is there a chance of a few changes given the three losses and who's available to come in right now?
Yeah. We'll have our match committee tonight. We'll obviously look at a few things in terms of structure and the way, you know, the sides balancing up. And then obviously we've got some medical tick-offs that we need to get through over the next 24, 48 hours. We've got some girls who are definitely ready. We had some girls play last Friday night in a organised match with some other Fremantle girls. So Emily Maguire, she's obviously a player where we're really excited about, pretty versatile, can go forward or back. Kate Bartlett's another player who's in really good form and training well. So, yeah, we're likely to make a couple of changes. You know, looking at the balance of our side, but also the Western Bulldogs.
You come up against the Dogs, as you've just mentioned. They won their first game quite impressively against the Saints, who have been okay themselves, the Saints, winning last week and falling just short of Adelaide, who are the defending champions. They then lost to Melbourne in a high-scoring contest against the Blues. When you talk about women's footy, 51-30, they lost by 21 points. So certainly going to be a tough contest at Leaderville Oval on Saturday, 4:10 when you get underway.
Yeah, definitely. The Bulldogs, yeah, obviously they've been right in their games, and obviously they did get the win a couple of weeks ago, so we're under no illusions that we need to make sure we're starting really well this week. We're really excited, obviously, to get a home game under our belt and, leadable 4:10 start this Saturday, so hopefully we get plenty of our Eagles fans down there. And two teams who are really desperate to obviously get another win in Conference B. So we're preparing well and we're really looking forward to Saturday.
Thank you, Luke. Good on you, mate. Good luck.
No worries, guys. Thanks again.
Good on you, Luke Dwyer there, and nice to get inside both football clubs in AFLW, and there's plenty of other games that are going to be played this weekend, and it starts on Friday night. In fact, the first game of the round goes before the State of Origin game, and that match will be played between Collingwood and Melbourne. The Tigers take on Geelong North against Gold Coast, and then on Sunday, it's Adelaide against the Blues and Brisbane against GWS to round it out. Hayes?
What do you do, Carl, if you're Luke Dwyer? Do you change anything from your pre-season plans with your game plan, or do you basically just stick with what you're doing, knowing that it's going to be better in the long run?
From what I saw, you make some changes and you experiment and you give a few other players a go. That's what I'll be doing. Trevor Gleeson will join us next. It's Kia's Open Season with match-winning deals and Australia's best 7-year warranty right across. As we normally do here on a Tuesday every week, Taipei get the power of Australia's biggest independent. We have a chat to our Wildcats coach and Trevor Gleeson. Welcome, Trev. How are you going, mate?
G'day, boys. How are we?
Really well. Pick up today my newspaper, and page 58 is where I find a story, and the headline, Taipan's full of venom. Are you ready to go?
I think we are, yeah. It's been a pretty long layoff. The guys are getting a little bit restless. So, yeah, we're ready to hit the court.
What do you feel about having such a long break between your last match of your season to now rolling into a three-game final series?
Yeah, it's a pity the fever break does that. And, you know, the teams in the finals don't play in fever, so there's a little bit of kirk in it. But you got to use this to your advantage. So we can freshen up some other guys throughout, you know, played a lot of minutes throughout the season. They can be fresh. Freshen up so, you know, that we're ready to go on Friday night.
It's going to be a high-quality final series, no doubt about that. But what have you been working on? Is it a chance for you to work on a few new plays to keep building that chemistry?
Yeah, all the above. And that's getting Damo back up to the level that we need him for the playoffs. So we're integrating with our Miles still out there. And, you know, we try different tactics at the practice court, and what works we take, what doesn't work so we throw away. And now it's really fine-tuning for Friday night.
Interesting that you didn't mention Tarico White in that. How much has he done through this period, and will he be good to go for Friday?
Yeah, no, look, he's jumping out of his skin. He's ready to go with it. Boys are throwing alley-oops to him. So, yeah, he's good to go, and we need a strong, fit, and athletic Tarico out there, and he usually turns up at the playoff time.
With everybody being fit, you've got some hard decisions to make on the starting five. Mitch Norton's filled in very well for Damian Martin in his absence. Who are you likely to go for in the starting five? Can you give us something?
Yeah, well, we'll probably decide that later on. But Mitch has been outstanding. I'm not totally sure how many games Damo was out for and what our record, but our last seven games were 6-1 with Miles in the lineup. And the starters have been really good, getting us off to a great start, being very aggressive, and, you know, that's what it takes in playoff time.
When it comes to Cairns, and I know that you probably don't really want to reflect too far back, but when they came to our court here earlier this season, they got the job done, and this is a team you've got to be wary of. I mean, they were the wooden spooner last year, so they've done a bloody good job to get to where they have, finishing third on the table.
Yeah, without a question. They've got some quality imports, and they probably underperformed last year, and this year they've played, you know, some great basketball. And these four teams, we know how strong the competition was when you're 15 and 13 and you miss out on the playoffs like New Zealand and Brisbane did. And these four teams, there's not much separating them at all. They're highly talented and very, very well coached. So we've got a lot of respect for Cairns, and we know we're going to have our, you know, bring our A game to get the win.
How much time do you put into a team when you head towards the finals? Is it double what you would normally put in, triple what you would normally put in because of the time you have to do it?
Yeah, we the first week we would take care of ourselves. We just want to fine tune what we're doing, and now this week we want to work a little bit on Cairns. We don't want to overdo it. By the time you play, you're sick to death of it, but it's a fine balance you've got to be as a coach to get yourself ready and prepare for the opposition, but not overkill that, you know, it's too much when the, you know, the bright lights come on.
How much work are you putting into the import duo, Oliver and Scott Mercado? Because, mate, they have been bugbears of yours.
Yeah, they've been really good, without a question. And, you know, that's quality imports, and they can really get it going with the on the scoring at any time, so the other way, they're going to have to defend us too. They're going to have to defend Bryce, and they're going to have to defend Miles. So, you know, we've got a few things up our sleeve ready to go for them.
On the back of a few of your youngsters that really stepped up in the last round when you rested a couple of players, do you have more confidence to give them bigger opportunity through the playoffs?
Yeah, I have. It's Warnie has been absolutely fantastic. He's been training the house down this last week. He's been really aggressive. He's using his athleticism, grabbing the ball above the rim and starts the fast break. He, he's been improving all the way through that we hoped throughout the season, but he had that ankle injury that missed the first 15 games. So, yeah, look, really impressed with Warney, and I'm sure he's going to have a great final series.
At the start of the season, would you have taken where you are right now in terms of wins? You finish in second spot, you get home court advantage, and given that most of your players look like they're fit and firing, would you have taken that?
Yeah, I just broke up a little bit, but at the start of the season, you know, we wanted to finish in the top two, and we've had 19 wins this year, which is one more than last year. It's the second highest wins we've had throughout the season since I've been here. So what you want to do at this time of the year is keep improving, and we've done that the last seven games. The team that normally improves wins a championship, so we're going to give this thing a shake.
Good luck, mate. We'll be watching, and we'll have a chat to you, win, lose or draw, next Tuesday. Thanks, Trev.
Thanks, boys. Cheers.
Trevor Gleeson, our Wildcats coach. Tyre Power's Big Buys, Big Brands sale. Buy three, get one free on Falcon tyres this February. Conditions apply. DJ Newbill was in the NBL Awards seconds team. You've got Mikado, who was named in the first five, and he was alongside, of course, a couple of the Wildcats boys. So very well-credentialed team. You throw in Majok Deng into that group as well, Hayes, and this is going to be an intriguing game. Looking forward to our Wildcats in action. We'll be back next, and we'll have a chat to Lee Tudor from the Essendon Football Club. The Bombers arrive tomorrow. You can get down to see them at Lathlane Park. We'll tell you about that next. Welcome back to Sports Day, Crown Perth Summer of Sport update. And this summer you can live a little larger at Crown. I don't know where Lee Tudor's staying. Maybe staying at Crown. Let's find out as we welcome him to Sports Day. Welcome, Lee. Where are you staying when you head west?
Yeah, I've got no idea, to be honest. I just jump on the bus and do what I'm told.
Well, the boys are here tomorrow because what we need to do is urge all the Essendon fans to get down there. It's an open training session down there at Mineral Resources Park, which is in Lathlane, which is the West Coast Eagles headquarters these days, which is where you're going to be playing this game.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. First really big hit out, and the boys are ready to have a go. It's always a long pre-season these days, so they're ready to jump into it.
Lee, polar opposites to last year. Everybody was talking you up in the media. There's been a few of us talking you down a little bit this year, mainly because of the injury concerns you've had. But are you confident you can overcome many of those concerns?
Yeah, well, there's quite a few coming back this week and over the next couple of weeks. So there's a few little niggles and offs towards the end of the year. So, you know, they've just been trying to get them right, and there's quite a few are sort of due back in the next 1, 2, 3 weeks. So hopefully by round one, they'll have a pretty good squad to choose from.
Are you any chance of getting Connor McKenna back, mate, given that he went home because he was homesick?
Well, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, he's been back in Ireland a couple of weeks now, but hopefully he'll be back, I think all reports are early next week.
Oh, that's good.
That probably gives him enough chance to even be ready for round one, because he's really only missed 2 weeks of training, and he's been doing a little bit over in Ireland as well. So he's generally pretty, he gets up and going pretty quickly. So there's still a chance there for round one.
That's great news, because you will miss him, won't you? I mean, his dash and his run and just the way that he was able to impact games, I felt last season specifically, was really good.
Well, yeah, especially when you put in with Sardi down there, it's hard to stop both of them. So when they're both up and going, they're pretty damaging. So between the pair of them, they're hard to stop. So he's just so damaging with his run and carry that he's a really important player for us.
And given that you've lost another defender in Patrick Ambrose, who did some really good jobs, he's starting to get the key guys and he's done some really good roles on them. What's the prognosis there? How long do you expect him to be out for?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but it's a PCL injury. Sees a specialist in the coming days. So from all reports, it's not on the lighter scale. So we expect him, he'll be a few weeks minimum. So depending on what the surgeon says and if he needs an op, but it doesn't look overly promising for the early rounds.
What about Tom Cutler? He came in during the off-season. He was impressive, I understand, in the recent hit-out.
Yeah, fantastic. His run was really good. His decision-making in ball use, all the sort of general things you look at early on in the year, he was probably in the top three players on the ground. He was absolutely fantastic. So he's given himself every chance to start the year off.
I've got to ask also about a guy from my hometown, Bryn Teakle. You just picked him up, the big ruckman. He's looking to get a spot on your list. He played in that game. What's he shown in his short time at the club?
Oh, just excited. He's just a young fella that's really keen to listen and learn. And he had a really good game last week. He got his hand to the ball first at most of the stoppages, and he was pretty impressive. And, you know, he's one of those blokes that's first in, last to leave. So he's given himself every chance to impress the coaches and the recruiting staff. So, yeah, he's really taken... taken every chance he's had so far with us.
And with Tommy Bell Chambers sidelined, obviously there is going to be competition for spots in that department too. So, you know, when one man's loss is another man's gain, so they say.
Well, that's exactly right. And lucky for us that it was really minor with Tommy Bell Chambers. So he's back doing a little bit already now, and his op went really well, so hopefully he won't be too far away either.
You do still expect that he'll be available for the start of the season or not? Not quite?
No, he'll be really close. Yeah? He, it was fairly minor what he had done, and he's had no swelling, so it's been a really good recovery for him. So, no, he's every chance to be available early on.
What sort of team can we expect you to bring tomorrow to contest against the West Coast Eagles? You're bringing a strong team. You're going to test a few of the youngsters out. How are you approaching it?
There's going to be a little bit of both. There's a few guys coming back. So, you know, Hurley and Smith and Zaharakis, Dylan Shield. So there's a bit of experience coming back into there that have come back from sort of injuries and a bit of layoff, but there's also some young guys that will get their chance too. And, you know, I think with 26 players in the squad, you can sort of make sure you get enough game time into the guys you want to. So it's a great opportunity for the old and the young.
Who are some of those youngsters that have been picked up in either last year's draft or the year before that you want to give us a bit of an insight into where they could get some early opportunity?
Yeah, well, last week we had a little bit of a hit out with Casey Demons and the Melbourne guys that didn't play in their game. And Harrison Jones presented really well and was really competitive in the air as a key forward. He's only light and got a lot of work to do on building an AFL body, but he showed some really good signs. And Nick Bryan, a big ruckman as well, that's, again, just light, but... Again, when he got his chance in the ruck, he got his hand to the ball and showed why the recruiters liked him and drafted him.
Mate, you're a man of my vintage, and you would have grown up watching State of Origin footy. What's your feeling, given that, you know, it's Victoria against the rest, and, you know, it's at least a chance to rekindle the spirit? Because, mate, to be perfectly honest, I've said this to my audience for a long time, I miss it. I'd like to see more of it. What about you?
Oh, I'm with you. I love it. Love it. Didn't miss a game. I used to go with my dad and watch, and the local boys from my local footy club in Essendon, and I just loved every bit of it. The best of the best. I just love it and would love to see it again. And from what I understand and what I read, especially over here, the players are really excited and they want to play. So I'm not sure about the timing. I think Friday night seems to be a pretty good time, but nothing better than watching the Vics and the rest of the states go against it. I just loved it.
It used to be played on a Tuesday, mate, and you could wag school and you could get a day off work, and all of a sudden actually work, in most cases work, came to the footy, didn't they?
That's right. No, I'm a massive fan of it.
Last one from me. Just the dynamic between John Worsfold and Ben Rutten. He takes over next year. He did take control, understanding that recent hit out that you had. Is he expected to do a little bit more through this pre-season, or will John take most of the control?
Yeah, well, John, you know, John's in charge. He's the senior coach, but you know, I think they've had a clear strategy in place of how they're going to do it. And John and Ben work really closely together. They spend a lot of time together. John oversees the program, but what a fantastic opportunity for Ben to be mentored by one of the greats of the game. So at the club, we think it's really exciting.
Good stuff, mate. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it. And we'll have a chat to you down the track. Thanks, Lee.
Good on you, Carl. Thanks, Paul.
Take care. Lee Tudor there from the Eston Footy Club. And this summer, Crown is the only destination where things are bigger, brighter and more fun. Back with more of Sports Day after this, Hayes.
Is it that bad at the Bombers, you'd think, with the injuries? I know there's a few that are going to be underdone, but it sounds like they'll get most of them back either in the early rounds of the season.
I've said this to you before, that if you've got interrupted pre-seasons, it doesn't do you any good. You can't get fit on the job, or for the most part. And, you know, I think our assessments in more recent times around teams like Melbourne last year, who had a lot of injuries in their pre-season, whilst they got some players back, they didn't have the impact that a lot thought that they could have. And sadly, they finished a fair way down the table. So, look, are Essendon going to be as good early as what they were last year? I reckon right now there's a question mark. And I suppose it's up to them to prove us wrong. But for me, I don't necessarily think that the Bombers are going to be as good as what they were last year.
They don't have Joe Danaher, and as you mentioned, there are a number of other players that haven't done too much. You mentioned Carl Hooker amongst that, and also their captain Dyson Heppel. But I think it's changed. The conditioning that these guys do, it's a lot different from when we played. I think when I didn't do a preseason, I struggled. But now, if you've got that ability to do something at least, whether it be bike or particularly if you can run, it does give you an advantage. I'm not prepared to completely ride them off.
I think they'll be up.
They lost their first two early last year, and they were real poor in the pre-season. I think they'll have a different approach. Can't have them making the eight because I've got all these other teams. But would not surprise.
Well, there you go. So
if they do get it together, they got Fremantle early, so there's could
so
potentially
you don't have them in
win.
The eight. So therefore, if you don't have them in the eight, you're saying they're going backwards because last year they made the eight.
Well, I think it's going to take 12 wins this year. I think what they get last
year
around
or
that
out?
Mark.
In or out?
Well, I'm going to say out.
Right.
But I wouldn't be surprised if they around the mark.
So that's a long-winded answer of saying that they're going backwards because last year they were
the eight. You think they're going real backwards?
I said that I don't think they'll make the eight. Now, to make the eight or not make the eight, sometimes it's the difference of a game between 11 and 12 games. Now, I'm not necessarily saying they're only going to win two or three games. That is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I don't think they're going as well as last year. They won 12 games last year, so they only have to go a game worse and they don't make it. So that's probably about where they are at right now, and they're going to have a fair bit of luck and things go their way, I think, to consider themselves a genuine top eight side. That is our thoughts on Essendon, and we'll be back with more sport. Welcome back to Sports Day for Green to Green Barron O'Day, because the little things are everything, and as we normally do on a Wednesday as we have a chat about golf, and one of the great parts about this week is that we have an opportunity to have a chat about the top ranking golf courses here in Australia. Steve Keepert is the Associate Editor of the Australian Golf Digest, and he joins us here on Sports Day, and none of the West Australian courses rank in the top 10, Steve. Welcome.
Hi, guys. How are you going? And yes, apologies on our behalf. It's a very competitive part of the list. It's a very competitive list top to bottom, but the top 10 is becoming even more so. And 15th was the best we could do for a WA course this time round.
Well, talk us through how this comes about. How many people actually go out and play, and what are some of the key criteria you look for in a golf course?
Yeah, this was a big change for us, this ranking, which we do every 2 years, because we drastically increased the size of our judging panel. It was about 45 people 2 years ago. This time it was 180, so literally quadrupling the size of our panel, which gave us a whole lot more data. Our judges look at our courses based on seven different criteria, but without running through all of them with you, they center on the quality of the design more than anything. It's the caliber of the golf course architecture that takes precedence. But then you've got things like conditioning and memorability and design variety as well. But the main criteria is how good is the design.
Do you have an even spread of judges throughout Australia?
Yeah, we do. In fact, in increasing the size of the panel, the less populous states, including WA, got a real boost. We recognised after the last couple of rankings that we were a bit short in WA and South Australia in particular. And so when we increase the size of the panel, those two states in particular got a lot more attention. So we feel it's the most accurate ranking we've come up with yet, and particularly when it comes to courses in WA and South Australia and the like.
Now, it looks like I should be heading down to Tasmania to play a bit of golf, along with Victoria, because, of course, all of the five Victorian leading courses are in the top 10. But Cape Wickham, second overall behind Royal Melbourne West. Now, just tell us about Cape Wickham.
Yeah, it's an amazing place. And when you consider that it's essentially on a rock in the middle of the ocean, it makes it even more so. So it's on King Island in Bass Strait, and it's right at the top end of King Island. And so it cops whatever weather is whipping across really the Southern Ocean and Bass Strait. So it's a really exposed but beautiful part of the country, and it's got an amazing golf course to boot.
I've played Lake Carronut many times. It's just around the corner from where I live here in WA, and it's come in as the leading West Australian course at 15th overall. One that I'm not overly familiar with is the West Australian. Is that in Yokine?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's got a terrific little site there with great views of the city. I actually went there last year for the first time. I tend to find myself in WA every year or two, but the West Australian Golf Club was one that I'd never actually made it to, and so it was nice to go and see it and see what a cool little part of Perth it really sits in. And so it's done well to basically sit where it was last time, just outside the top 50.
Western Australia, Lake Carronup, as Carl said, 15th overall. Joondalup Quarry, June, I love that course. 18th, the cut, 36. I also like that course, except when it gets windy, Carl. It's very difficult down there.
Go off the fairway there, you've got no balls.
As is Lynx Kennedy Bay, you're right. 38th overall in the West Australian, 56th overall. Lynx, can you tell us the difference between a Lynx golf course and a normal golf course?
Yeah, it's a really good question because it's a bit of an abused term in golf. Technically, a Lynx course is on land that's been reclaimed from the sea. So it really has to sit flush against the ocean. You could even argue that somewhere like Lynx Kennedy Bay is borderline whether you call it a true Lynx course. It's a little bit manufactured, but I think for the purpose of the kind of style of design it is, I think it fits the term Lynx really well because it is almost like a slice of Britain in WA, and I think it got a real seal of approval when Stephen Leaney, of course, the great WA golfer, was in his prime. He once told me that when the British Open was coming up, he used to spend a bit of time down at Kennedy Bay because he felt like that was the best place to groove his game ahead of the British Open, because he said it's the closest thing we have in WA to a proper British links course. So that's a pretty good seal of approval in my book.
Hey Steve, when you look at the leading courses around Australia, is there, and one of the leading criteria you just explained to us was the design of the course, is there any big names that feature, say, multiple times inside the top 10 courses around our country or not?
In terms of who designed the courses?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess we've got a little bit of repetition from the great Alistair McKenzie, who many people view as one of the best, if not the greatest golf course architect of all time. And he spent a very brief period in Australia in 1926, but it was a very influential period of time he spent here because the courses he touched or gave designs for really set in place an amazing run of golf course architecture here. And so his is a name with Royal Melbourne and the like that keeps popping up and really was a six-week period or 10-week period that he was in Australia for, but it really had such a lasting legacy for golf course design across not just Australia but around the world.
How many of the judging panel are actually ex-golfers or current golfers professionally?
We tend not to have that many, partly because touring pros aren't necessarily in Australia for all that long. We've got a couple of ex-players who aren't on tour very much anymore. But, professional golfers, while historically we've had quite a few on our panel, there's not that many these days. And it's mainly for that reason. It's not that they can't see a golf course the way a regular amateur golfer can. It's generally down to how much time are they actually spending in Australia and getting around, because that was one of the things in growing the size of the panel. We were looking for golfers who played a lot and travelled a lot, and touring pros don't generally fall into that category too much.
If I wanted to go on a golfing trip with all of me buddies, which state would you suggest that I go to?
It's a tough one. I mean, we're blessed because there are really terrific golf courses to be found everywhere in the country, but you'd have to say Victoria. I mean, between not just the Melbourne Sandbelt and Royal Melbourne and the like that everybody knows so well, you've got the Mornington Peninsula courses and Bellarine Peninsula courses an hour outside the city in two different directions, and Victoria's very spoiled. You've just got to pick the right time of year, I think, but if you were really looking to tick off a whole bunch of exceptional golf courses in one trip, you'd have to go there.
Nice to chat, Steve. Thank you very much for your time, mate.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Steve Keepert there, Associate Editor of the Australian Golf Digest, and you can enjoy any of those golf courses. I know that at Joondalup, I think I saw Paul Hazelby knock one to within an inch of the cup for a hole in one.
You saw that on Facebook, didn't you?
No, I was in that. Weren't we playing in a pro-am together on that particular day? I reckon we were. Wasn't it a pro-am event that you did that?
No, I'm not sure it was.
I thought it was.
I put it on Facebook, so I think you remember it from that.
Right,
it was about that far,
not
over
far.
The quarry.
Yeah.
The great hole.
Yeah, and that's exactly the quarry June 9 or 18 at Joondalup that has got 18th overall. So there you go. A little bit of a connection there. Barrett O'Day, don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Back with more of Sports Day after this. Now we finish off here on Sports Day. Boost your sales with the Australian-made logo with On This Day for Barra and O'Day. And Hayes, I can tell you that way back in 1964, Barra and O'Day, because the little things are everything, Muhammad Ali knocked out Sonny Liston in seven rounds for his first World Heavyweight Championship title. Do you reckon that Muhammad Ali would have been impressed by what he saw this week in the Wilder and Fury fight?
I think he'd be super impressed with Tyson Fury, no doubt about that. I think he would have had his measure, but he holds a lot of the belts right now, Tyson Fury. There hasn't been too many in the boxing world that have done that, Carl.
Righto, Hayes, for Barron O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. What else you got?
Well, Victoria 9 for 330 and currently 3 for 73 in their second dig. Queensland were out for 184. Will Sutherland, the Victorian, he was the destroyer in New South Wales. 373 they made today. South Australia currently 6 for 135. And as we mentioned earlier, WA on track. 371 they made and they've currently got Tasmania 5 for 188. Paris and Dave Moody amongst the wicket takers.
All right. Tomorrow, Mark Lacroix is going to join us earlier because we don't have a show on Thursday because we are going to be broadcasting the game between the West Coast Eagles and the Essendon Bombers, and that match is going to be played down at Lathlane Park. That is the Eagles' headquarters these days, so make sure that you come down and take a look. We will also have a chat to a real value local hero. Will Schofield will join us from the West Coast Eagles. Justin Longmuir from the Freo Dockers. Adam Voges, of course, as we recap what has transpired in the Sheffield Shield game, and we'll have a chat to an Olympic swimmer in our Aussie update. So all of that is ahead of us on 882 6PR tomorrow night. We'll see you then.